Good morning, Chair Kelly, members of the board, Steve Forrester Hirsch. For the record, my name is Doug Graff. I serve as Chief of Fire Protection for the Department of Forestry. I'm joined today by Deputy Chief Tim Holschback, who will present a decision item for the board today to initiate rulemaking to advance fire protection in Oregon as envisioned through the Governor's Council on Wildfire Response and directed by the legislature with the passage of 762. And I take a moment to just share a few observations at this moment in time with the board on this topic. Absolutely. In my career in fire and forestry, my observations has been relatively much easier to invest in response to the increasing fire risk on the landscape. And today, I feel like we're at a watershed moment for Oregon, and frankly, consistent with Western states to really carry forward the vision of the cohesive strategy and think beyond response. But the cohesive strategy recognizes adequate response as a national strategy. Fire is important. The second tenet is fire-adapted communities. And the third tenet is resilient landscapes. And that is the national pathway for us to mitigate the catastrophic risk of wildfire. And today, we're embarking with the board on the conversation on the latter two tenets, the wildfire adapted community with stats with wildfire risk mapping and wildland urban interface class definitions and prescribed burning investments in that program through advancing policy on all of those fronts. What is very interesting for the Department of Forestry, specifically the Fire Protection Division at this moment in time also, is we are before the board often to report out on the work of the fire response. And I am very, very excited to be with you at this moment in time and share what I would reference as a leadership moment to change the dial and really change the condition across the landscape that we've been facing to give the adequate response a chance to be successful. And that's carrying forward the other two tenets of fire-adapted communities and resilient landscapes. And what that takes is policy work. And that has been envisioned once again through the council, Governor's Wildfire Council. And we're here today to walk through strategy on what that policy work looks like over the next year. Tim Holschback will detail that as directed by Senate Bill 762. And also, I would emphasize what a paradigm shift for the division is that our priority always has been response and support of the fire conditions on the landscape on any given time during fire season. And we're being asked to carry two priorities: the policy front, the work that needs to be done, along with the response. And I'm very pleased to highlight the legislative investments in 762 makes possible for myself to have that capacity and space to deliver on both those highest priorities. And so Tim, as the Deputy Chief of Policy and Planning, is fully dedicated to carrying forward the policy work with the board moving forward. It's a paradigm shift for me. So I'm taking a step back and need to be thinking differently about carrying forward fire protection in the state of Oregon. And I welcome that leadership and vision and expectation. And I hope I meet that challenge for the state and this board. Thank you very much, Tim.
Thank you, Doug. Good morning, Chair Kelly, State Forester Hirsch, members of the board. As Doug mentioned, my name is Tim Holschback. I serve as the Deputy Chief of Policy and Planning with the Oregon Department of Forestry. In today's topic, we'll be presenting an overview of Senate Bill 762 and the rulemaking requirements that were part of the legislation to advance policy that will take place over the next few years. For each particular topic that contains rulemaking requirements, we will present an overview of that requirement, of the requirements for that section. We present a proposed composition of rules advisory committees associated with those topics. We'll walk through key dates in the process and board action items associated with those dates, and any particular needs that may arise for special board meetings to meet deadlines identified in the legislation. And at the end, we'll summarize with a review of the action items for this topic related to today's presentation. I'd like to, as Chair Kelly mentioned in his opening remarks, I would like to thank the board members for their commitments of time for participation in the various rule advisory committees that we'll be undertaking over this policy work. So we'll start out with the Senate Section 7 of Senate Bill 762. This section pertains to provisions and creation of a statewide map of wildfire risk, requires the department to develop and maintain a comprehensive statewide map of wildfire risk that includes the wildland-urban interface, boundaries, and risk classes, and is to be completed by June 30th of 2022. The risk classes identified with this map must be, they're clearly identified. There will be five risk classes of low, medium, high, and extreme risk, as well as a risk class of no risk that will be identified. This is a difference from previous defensible space, from a previous defensible space legislation, in that previously there was four classes of fire risk. So this will be a change to the five classes. These risk classes must be determined using criteria including weather, climate, topography, and vegetation in the formulation of each class. The section also requires the department to collaborate with OSU, Oregon State, or Oregon Office of the State Fire Marshal, and other state agencies, local governments, Indian tribes, public bodies, and included any additional information sources in the creation of the map that are available. The map itself must be publicly accessible and requires ODF in coordination with OSU to provide technical assistance to state and local governments in the use of the map and the associated Oregon Explorer wildfire risk portal. The Oregon Explorer itself is designated to be the official mapping display of wildfire risk for the state of Oregon. The final map is intended to feed and to inform policy actions and programs into the future, which are detailed in other sections of Senate Bill 762. We'll include some of that as the presentation. In regards to the statewide wildfire risk map, what you see in front of you is a proposed composition for a rules advisory committee related to a statewide map of wildfire risk. The composition is based around Section 36 of Senate Bill 762, which identified a Wildfire Programs Advisory Council to serve as advisement for the Wildfire Programs Director in the Governor's Office. The entities listed are related to that section. The state agencies that are identified are included in the proposed Rules Advisory Council, as the map itself will inform key policy decisions related to their sections of Senate Bill 762 and the provisions that they are required to carry out in relation to wildfire risk.
Tim, I might jump in here for a moment. I mentioned a paradigm shift for the division. Typically, we're before you with some photos of the fire conditions and activities. This presentation is going to be very text heavy. And I wanted to pause just at this moment just to emphasize that, because it's a detailed process for us to meet these timelines and within the Secretary of State guidelines, so we deliver as expected by the legislature. And I wanted to just linger a moment on the advisory committee, because what's critically important for us to be successful is to be inclusive in this conversation. As you'll hear more about in the development of the policy, the downstream implications relative to defensible space standards, et cetera, all begins with the work that the department is doing on the wildland urban interface definition and the classification. So we want to be inclusive on the front end broadly across agencies and across all interested parties in the state, and truly are committed to do that. And I hope you hear that through the continuation here of the presentation. Thank you, Tim.
I want to also add that the representation of the Rules Advisory Committee does not exclude any groups from providing comment throughout the process. Each Rules Advisory Committee meeting will be following public meeting law, which has open public comment periods, as well as opportunities in front of the Board of Forestry to provide comment, and the Secretary of State has specific rules regarding administrative rulemaking, as well as integration of public comment into that rulemaking. I'd like to take a pause to allow some digestion time to for the folks who are on this list for you to go through them.
If you don't mind, I'd maybe just ask a question myself here, Nancy Hirsch, Acting State Forester. Question, comment combined, and maybe to staff first. Perhaps a little context as I came in, obviously in June. My sense is that the folks listed here for this advisory committee were also very, many of them, if not all of them, were very much active in the careful kind of maneuvering through the legislative process and kind of where the language ended. Is that fair to say?
I would assess that as fair. Many of the folks were involved with the process in the working with the bill starting in January in the early formulations of Senate Bill 762, as well as in the Governor's Council on Wildfire Council, even before that.
And just for clarity, the origin of this list was this, you guys put it together, correct?
Yes, this is assembled as
just for clarity with the board, not that I'm recommending any second guessing here, it is our correct that it's our authority to determine membership here?
Yes.
Is everybody clear on that? Okay.
Maybe. Okay, for me to, for the record, McComb, maybe I'm not clear on that, Jim. Since the train has already left the station a bit here, it seems like if we're going to make changes, we would need to make them soon. Is that correct? Nancy's shaking her head, yes.
Excuse me on that one. Can you repeat that one more time, please?
A question, Nancy Hirsch, Acting State Forester, Board Member McComb. I think the question there was the sensitivity of time. So if there's adjustments, additions that the board would like to contemplate, the question is around the timing. Today is the day, or is it beyond today?
Today is not the day that decisions need to be made regarding the composition of the RAC, of the Rules Advisory Committee. The first meetings is not for this particular topic. It's not for another 2 weeks. With that, it is the board's opportunity to provide that feedback and direction, however, for the department to proceed with coordination with membership of that group to move to be participating in the rulemaking effort.
I'd just like to comment. I think there has been a little bit of a stumble here, because it was, I wasn't really even clear when I first saw this list. It kind of looked like a fait accompli, and I wasn't really clear that it is our authority. And So that probably should have been handled a little bit differently. My review, personal review, as I look at this and think about it, I think it's pretty balanced. We have, and I also think at the end of the day, we are going to be, as a board, making the final decision. So I'm personally comfortable with this makeup on this committee, and this is not the only one. We've got that same issue, but I'm open to other points of view, obviously.
So this is catching me and probably some of the rest of us off guard a little bit. This is McComb speaking. And it doesn't sound like we have a lot of time to make any decisions regarding who should be on this list. So I'm curious what the Chair Kelly, what your recommendation is going forward if we do have suggestions for either additions or deletions.
Good question. I believe it's it would be in our authority certainly to make additions down the road, correct? I guess it would be my recommendation on this and the others that we move ahead with this, and that if we see signs that or really figure out that somebody is not at the table that should be, that we address that. We would have to, this committee is going to be operating for quite some time. The other one really is on the WUI is 100 days. So we would, that'll be a little bit more difficult, but we could still, I'm certainly add membership.
Great. Thank you.
Member Ferrari.
Thank you, Chair Kelly. So I'm just curious, how many RAC meetings are anticipated with this group? You said the first one should begin in about 2 weeks. And how many do you think, how many meetings do you think you'll have? And then my second question is just, have these entities all been contacted about this RAC too? I'm assuming they're available and interested. And we know that for all of these groups.
Chair Kelly, members of the board. Yes, the entities have been contacted about availability pending the board's review of the composition. The meetings will be for this one, as I'll have in the next slide, but they'll be approximately every other week. And today we're presenting three proposed rules advisory committees to provide assistance with development of administrative rules across all of the rulemaking with Senate Bill 762.
I'd like to, Chair Kelly, Doug Graff, I'd like to speak plain text here so we're clear on the makeup of the committee. Today's decision is to kick off rulemaking authority for the department. This is the group that has been engaged from the beginning, and we've been communicating along the way and has showed interest. The board does not have to meet again if there is other interested parties down the road to ensure that we are inclusive. If we've missed someone along the way, we can adjust the rules advisory committee. So I want to be clear text on that.
Thank you. Small process check. I'm not trying to make our process more formal than it needs to be, but because of the those who are following online, that's why I'm saying board member Ferrari, Chambers, et cetera. That's really because we've had this feedback that people have a difficult time understanding who is speaking. So I'm not really encouraging you all to have to repeatedly say, Board Chair Kelly, blah, blah, blah. It's fine. Tim, Doug.
So getting into the meat and potatoes of the process, the rulemaking process, as I mentioned before, is itself is overseen by the Oregon Secretary of State, which has specific rules to carry out the development and implementation of administrative rules. The first key date is today's board meeting with the introduction of the topic to the board and the department requesting permission to promulgate rules related to the section. The Rules Advisory Committees, due to a truncated timelines, will plan to be meeting biweekly starting on August 5th in relation to the development of the rules surrounding the statewide map of wildfire risk. The department itself, after those working through those, the first meeting, or the department will present draft rules to the board at the March 22 Board of Forestry meeting. And at the meeting, the department requests permission to conduct public hearings and to file the draft rules with the Secretary of State. Then of course, filing the draft rules, the notification to interested parties and legislatures, as well as to the public of what those rules will be. After that is filed with the Secretary of State, the department will conduct public hearings to solicit the public comment on those rules as well. The final rules will be presented to the board for approval at the June 22nd Board of Forestry meeting, along with a summary of all the comments that were submitted throughout the process prior to the board's action of approval. Similarly, in a very closely related topic, running down a parallel pathway, is the sections 31 through 33 of Senate Bill 762 made significant amendments to Oregon Revised Statutes 477.015 through 064. What this section is commonly referred to as Senate Bill 360, or the Oregon Forest Land Urban Interface Defensible Space Act. This directs, with the amendments to this section, it removed what previously was the forest land, the definition of forest land urban interface from statute. The section furthermore directs the Board of Forestry to establish a definition of the wildland urban interface and also associates a timeline of 100 days to provide for that definition. Additionally, there's a requirement for rules to be established to identify and develop criteria to identify and classify the wildland urban interface. This revision of this section also moved defensible space administration requirements from the Department of Forestry, and in Section 8 of the bill moved them to the Office of the State Fire Marshal for administration of the defensible space requirements. Again, in front of you is the proposed composition of a Rules Advisory Committee related to the wildland urban interface. These committees are intended to have separate charters and separate scopes. The purpose for that is to maintain focus and to meet the different deadlines that are associated with each topic. It is largely the same entities as the statewide risk map. The legislative session had both actions largely intertwined. So this is a plan to keep separate, to have the parallel pathways to meet all of our all the deadlines associated with these. The key dates associated around the wildland urban interface definition, again, starts today with the introduction of the topic, and the action item for this topic is the request for permission to promulgate rules from the board. Rules Advisory Committee for this topic will begin meeting July 27th, which is next Tuesday. The meetings will be weekly to help facilitate and meet that 100-day deadline and to meet the Secretary of State's critical deadlines in the administrative rule process. After the general definition of wildland urban interface is identified in draft rule, then the Rules Advisory Committee will transition to a biweekly meeting to try to be on alternating weeks with the statewide risk map meeting. This is to help facilitate not only staff commitment, but also Rules Advisory members' commitment as well, to help help minimize and provide a little bit of efficiency. This section of rules may require special meetings by the Board of Forestry, contingent on the rulemaking process for the general definition of WUI. Again, in alignment with the statewide map, the department is planning to present the draft rules regarding the wildland urban interface criteria and how it's identified to the Board of Forestry at the March 22nd Board of Forestry meeting. And this is beyond the general definition, but any associated definitions that were with that, as well as the criteria to how to calculate the wildland urban interface on the landscape and how it is being portrayed on the statewide risk map. And then final rules were presented to the board for approval at the June 22nd Board of Forestry meeting. Section 25 and 26 of Senate Bill 762 referred to the prescribed fire as their key topic. required the Board of Forestry and the department to establish by rule the Certified Burn Manager Program. The critical change with the legislation is it changed what was in ORS 526-360. It changed where the board may establish a certified burn manager program to the board shall. So that also requires ODF to consult with the Oregon Prescribed Fire Council concerning best practices for conducting the program, initiate rulemaking to establish the program by November of 2021, and to provide a progress report to the Legislative Assembly by December of 2021. In addition, it also directed the Department of Forestry to clarify two sections of the wild forest law enforcement rules pertaining to cross-boundary burning or prescribed fire to allow landowners to accomplish that in a joint manner and have that work carried out. And that is to be completed by November 30th of 2022. Again, this topic, the department is also looking to establish a rules advisory committee to provide input. Containing folks who were interested in this topic as well. There was a separate bill that was tracked through the legislative session of House Bill 2572, and the exact same language was consolidated into Senate Bill 762. And the entities that went into developing that particular legislation is what you see on the screen here. And those who express interest in moving this prescribed fire forward within the state of Oregon. Key dates related to the prescribed fire rulemaking include, again, today's action item of the request for permission to promulgate rules. The Rules Advisory Committee for the Certified Burn Manager Program will begin meeting monthly on the third Wednesday of the month, which August 18th will be their first meeting, and it'll continue until that program is ready with final rules. There is no end date associated with that one for completion. The Board of Forestry will be requested, it's requested to initiate rulemaking the November of 2021 deadline to start that. We're requesting that today to meet that legislative requirement. Board of Forestry is also was required in the law to initiate rulemaking for the clarification of 477-515 and 625 for the cross-boundary burning by November. That is also being requested today to meet that legislative deadline. And that work will be completed prior to the November 22 date as well. The final section of rulemaking that was identified for the board under Senate Bill 762 required the state forester, in collaboration with the state fire marshal, state agencies, and local governments, to establish baseline levels of fire protection for areas outside of the forest protection districts that are administered by the Oregon Department of Forestry. It also authorized the state forester to provide financial assistance to counties and landowners for forming these wildfire protection jurisdictions, and to help ensure that provide for training opportunities, development of facilities, and other resources that the forester could provide. And it was required that after these rules were promulgated and finalized, would require the counties to ensure that any applicable lands within that county had a baseline level or higher of fire protection by January 1, 2026. For this particular section of rulemaking, because of its deadlines that being in 2026, and also with the competing and imminent deadlines with the other sections, the department's planning to return to the board in July of 2022 to request permission to start rulemaking processes for this particular section. So, for a summary of the action items identified today, is the development of administrative rules pertaining to the statewide map displaying wildfire risk, which is Section 7 of Senate Bill 762, the creation of the Certified Burn Manager Program, which is Section 26 of Senate Bill 762, opening up the for review and to clarify the enforcement rules promulgated under ORS 477-515 and 625, which is in Section 25 of the Senate Bill 762, an opportunity to provide further review of enforcement as a holistic policy change and bring those recommendations back to the Board of Forestry as well, and to establish a definition of wildland urban interface, determining the criteria to identify and classify that in Section 31 through 33 of the bill. I apologize for not having any pictures.
Thank you, Tim. Before we get to questions, I would just offer the focused attention necessary to deliver on this, I hope, is clear from the division at this point, and we'll certainly need Tim's attention. 762 came with capacity beyond a deputy chief to deliver on this. So, Tim, could you speak to your current efforts to, you know, show competence in the process and the capacity needs, particularly on facilitation and project management for us as we're moving forward?
Yes, Doug. So, with the additional capacity, there was allotment of funds to help provide for a facilitator. So the department is working with Oregon Consensus as well to help facilitate the WUI definition discussion as well as the statewide risk mapping. There is also positional capacity for a certified or a prescribed fire coordinator who will help provide staff assistance for the certified burn manager program, mm-hmm. as well as a policy analyst for development of administrative rule and review for the to support the baseline standards as well as the other policy work needed.
Thank you, Tim. And then the other piece I would leave with you for questions, and looks like we have time, plenty of time here to clarify anything we've missed, is obviously solid work to date, thinking about implementation and capacity needs to deliver. A couple highlights I would offer is we did initiate an informational meeting yesterday. We could do that in advance of the board meeting and before any direction for the board to bring all parties interested in these topics. And Tim delivered a more robust presentation yesterday to that party, and I think there was 70-plus individuals who attended yesterday. Prior to that, wanted to recognize we did meet with the governor's office along with sister agencies who have responsibilities within delivery on 762 to ensure continuity and alignment of our processes. So that was done the week after legislative session closed to ensure that we had a plan and we're not being redundant, and the multiple rules advisory committees had opportunities to overlap where possible. So we walked and thought through that strategically. So those are a couple meetings we've had broadly in preparation for this. And with all that said, it's not going to be easy. This was a lot of work coming our way, but I really wanted to express our dedication and commitment to it. There's a lot of unknowns moving forward, but we're going to position ourselves the best we can to be successful. Appreciate the support already expressed through the board, up this time. So welcome questions and deliberation.
Board Member McComb has a question or comment.
Thank you, Jim. So first of all, thanks for digging into this so quickly and so rapidly. And it's going to be a lot of work, and I recognize that. And I'll do what I can to help on one of the committees, but it's a huge amount of work for your staff, and I realize that. One comment and one question. The comment deals with the risk mapping. I believe that the climate data currently used in the wildfire risk on Oregon Explorer covers the period from 2016 to 2018, maybe 19, I'm not sure. I hope that the update to that risk map is at least current climate data and ideally some projections in the near future. The question I have, though, is that each of these rules that we will be developing and voting on seems to me, at least, to come with a certain level of liability. And I'm wondering whether there is periodic review by DOJ or some other group that can help us understand what potential liabilities might be or might exist.
Thank you for the question. The review for liability, DOJ is part of our rulemaking process to make sure that we have the language that is written with the intent of what we're trying to accomplish, as well as a review of pitfalls. It's not uncommon for, as we go through Rules Advisory Committee meetings, where these items are brought up, and then we refer to DOJ as well and utilize them as our legal experts as well.
Then a follow-up on the data. We will rely heavily on OSU, Oregon State University, relative to the data on climate, the latest quantitative risk assessment. I don't have the details in front of me, but it sounds like you've looked into the date range. So we'll always, you know, be looking to OSU to advance that, obviously, so we're getting the best and most current data that we can. So it's, you know, reflecting current realities, but I do not have a sense of, you know, is it ready to move forward to a different range of years, but hear the point on that.
Thank you, Doug. Yes, I have spoken with a few folks at OSU, and I think there needs to be clarity on what the expectations are regarding the climate data that will be used to set these wildfire risk assessments.
Copy. Thank you.
Board Member Chambers.
Thank you. I'd like to go back to where we started on focus, because there's a lot here, and spending, you know, over a year and a half on the Wildfire Council, there is a lot to learn here for any of us on any of these committees. And that's even if we spent a year plus on the Wildfire Council. But the reason I say focus, and I would include roadmap and scope in that, is the thing that was, you know, so evident to me on the Wildfire Council is 93% of our problem or acres burned the last 5 years is U.S. Forest Service and BLM acres. But that's not our focus here. And I think as we look at these, as we look at, you know, what the scope and focus is of each of these, it's that urban interface as it relates to those, you know, high-risk acres. And I think, Doug, as we think about this process, keeping in front of these committees, you know, what is our track record? What are we burning? You know, so because I can just see us, you know, there's a lot of work to be done here, but keeping that focus, I can see how important that will be. You know, what do we know to be true? What are we burning? What are the acres burned? And really keep that in front of these committees. I really think that facilitator is essential because the makeup of some of these committees looks like the makeup of the Wildfire Council. You've got a lot of competing interests, a lot of diverse voices, and I think that facilitator will be essential there. So, you know, thank you for your leadership here again. And roadmap, scope, and focus, I think, will be really important to having good success with in the time frame we need to get this work done.
Thank you, Kyla. I might emphasize that point right now, that it's critically important. At the time of the Governor's Wildfire Council, the data points that are clear is ODF protects 16 million acres of forest and grazing land and represented about half, close to half of the numbers of fires in the state of Oregon. Over the 10 years, we've experienced closer to 10% of the acres burned in the state of Oregon. And that's our focus on initial attack, keeping fires small. So you can see that in the data. What's interesting, I didn't want it to linger, just to emphasize the point you just made. Last year, we were close to 40% of the acres burned in the state of Oregon, as we're seeing more and more fires come into the private lands, into the urban interface and lands that we protect. And that data point is pretty much consistent again this year, tracking this, you know, this fire season. So a lot more urban interface, private lands fires. So keeping fresh on those data points to understand the scope of the issue as we develop policy will be important. And I just wanted to clear, you know, emphasize that.
Great. Other questions? Board Member Doomling?
And a quick question, I think, Tim, for on the WUI dates here. So there's a 100-day sort of time window we have to do this. But then at the end of the dates, there's sort of a March and June of next year decision items. Can you walk me through what's happening in 100 days and what happens next year?
Board Member Doomling, the 100-day deadline is the general definition of the wildland-urban interface. The remainder of the time is the, we'll call it the definition of the definition, as well as the criteria for the identification and how to calculate out the what the wildland-urban interface is and the methodology of drawing lines on the map to identify it.
Yeah, I'll add a little bit clarity and try plain text on that. We can define the definition in 100 days, but that does not give the GIS mapping person enough sidebars to draw the lines. We need to build the criteria to be explicit on what's in and out and where to draw those lines. So building that refinement beyond just the definition will be necessary to deliver on, drawing the lines on the map, what's within a wildland urban interface and what's outside of a wildland urban interface.
Any other board comments, questions? Board Member Ferrari.
Sorry, this might be it's related, but a little bit off topic on a different section. But I'm interested in the 20-year strategic plan and whether or not this the statewide risk assessment map is informing that effort. And there's just other risk assessments referenced here, and I'm unclear how they relate.
Yeah, there are many components of 762, and one of those is the 20-year plan. I envision this would be a very valuable tool and inform, you know, how Oregon postures in the development of that plan and likely a part, I would expect a part of that plan as baseline information. But, you know, outside our timelines and scope of duty relative to rule promulgation for the division's work in front of you today.
Right. It's interesting because you have to update on this plan also, it seems like, in 2022, and it wants to move forward projects that are in high-risk land, right? But you're not necessarily going to have that done yet, and so it's got a different system here. And so I guess I'm, in the scheme of timelines, it would be interesting to have a flow chart. Not to give you I don't mean to give you more work, but there's just a lot of different pieces that are moving and when they insert into other processes, right, it would be interesting to see that. And then my other question was how, I'm just interested in how the tribes are interfacing on some of these different issues or efforts and if they've expressed interest or engagement.
We're currently performing outreach with our tribal entities in the state. So that's ongoing.
Nancy Hirsch, acting state forester here. It's been really, really great discussion. And just as I think we're all digesting as quickly and as rapidly as possible. I talked about 42 days earlier since the last board meeting. You know, I think we're about 21 days since the legislation passed. And so, you know, I just really want to commend the level of engagement by the board and definitely commend the folks here at the table, really, really embracing this opportunity that really was, you know, kind of handed us all collectively, and the partnership that we have here at the table to really, you know, directly and deliberately move forward, you know, hand in hand, step by step. That said, this is a ton to digest, and I tend to be a person that needs to kind of break this down into the as simple as possible, and I don't know that this will help, but I might need affirmation by both Tim and Doug on this. As I look at this, you know, in plain language, when we talk about the Secretary of State and the rulemaking processes, you know, what we're saying there is, number one, the agency is very experienced at rulemaking. I'd say probably to some degree, the State Forest Division more over decades, right? This opportunity of this magnitude of policy work is huge. I will also say that I have very high confidence in Tim Holschback leading the policy shop and the folks that he has around him, and knowing that we have Oregon consensus, as well as other folks that we'll be able to add. It's also strict in terms of the timelines. Again, a lot of rulemaking processes typically that the board would go through wouldn't necessarily come from a set timeline. You would be able to kind of more deliberately determine, you know, what that timeline looked like. So I just want to be real honest about that. We're all being asked to do a lot here. The focus, the clear roadmap, the scoping, the inclusiveness with the professional expertise helping with this process. I do believe that in partnership here and with all Oregonians that we can be successful, and rules can also be adapted. You know, you had some questions before I shift there. In plain language for me, and this is where I'll look for corrections. In my simple math, we have six rulemaking processes. One of those, the WUI definition, is the shortest, most, you know, nearest commitment of time, and that's that 100-day one. Staff here have also talked about the MAP today in terms of initiating that rulemaking or the promulgation of administrative rules. They are asking for that around the, you know, again, the third piece here being the certified burn manager program. There's two other ones related to enforcement and prevention, which we didn't really get into a lot of details. But then lastly, I believe they've described that sixth one that will be further out there in time, that was related to the, what's the term there for the baseline protection standards across the state. So help me, but it looks to me like there's going to be six different moving pieces there. Is that fair? Okay. And I don't know that that helps, but I had to digest that for myself. And I think we can also help not just the board, but the public with enhancing some visual displays and timelines. And also the interconnectivity, which is the last point I wanted to offer some feedback on. You were asking about the 20-year plan, the strategic plan, I believe is the term. And I don't have in front of me the section there. That work will be happening in the agency through the partnership and planning program. Those folks are as quickly as these folks getting that work up and running. That will come with some capacity, I believe. And I think that as Bill Herber walks through the budget this afternoon, you'll be able to begin to connect the dots on the capacity. But I've already been in conversations with John Tokarczyk on that. And then also with 762, we probably won't hear a lot of details today, but I think without a doubt in some of our just informal reports or future meetings, there's about $25 million in mitigation and grants that will come to the partnership side of partnership and planning. And that's really that shop in terms of partnership. They do all the Federal Forest Restoration Initiative work, the Good Neighbor Authority work. This all lands, all hands, landscape resilience. And now we're plugging in two new programs to deliver with timelines and money that needs to be spent. So there's a lot more to talk about there. And I think those were the only pieces that I kind of wanted to help maybe clarify.
Member McComb.
Yeah. Thank you, Jim. So to Nancy and Chandra's point, flowcharts would be good. Help me a lot. And I know that's another thing to ask of you, and I apologize for that. But the visuals for me, and I think for others, probably would be a good idea. The other question I had is, as I look through the committee structure, it's not clear who the science advisors would be. And I'm wondering if there needs to be a science advisor or science advisors, plural, for each committee to be sure that the policies that are developed are using the most current and recognized available science.
So with the committees, it would be expected to be bringing in technical experts from both ODF and from OSU in particular to help the committee members be able to make or inform their policy decisions, as well as making sure that what the decisions are coming out as are mappable as well, and to make sure they'll have the desired effect in the, on the technical aspect of it. So it's the science to inform the policy, and then the technical drawings of the mapping as well to make sure what we're being asked to produce a product that has some static requirements as well. But definitely OSU would be where we'd be looking at, as well as the Forest Service for their with their experience with the quantitative wildfire risk assessment.
No, thanks, Tim. And I think OSU personnel are great. Forest Service, certainly. BLM, possibly. But I think it would be helpful when you develop the flow charts to indicate where those people engage and what their role is. I mean, more specifically, call out that piece of it. Thank you.
Okay, this is a decision item. Hillary, do we have any anyone signed up for public comment?
No, we do not have anyone signed up for item four today.
All right, in that case, I would like to seek out a motion. And this is to approve the promulgation of administrative rules relative to all that we've been talking about. Is anybody willing to put a motion out there?
I move that we move forward with the promulgation of rules regarding Senate Bill 762.
Thank you. Okay. In that case, I will poll the board. Carla Chambers.
Aye.
Ben Doomling.
Aye.
Chandra Ferrari.
Aye.
Brenda McComb.
Aye.
And I also vote aye. And with that, the board has reached consensus and the motion carries. We are not quite 15 minutes ahead of schedule. I understand that our lunch may not be here quite yet. And we've also been invited to for a quick tour of, what do we call it over there, Fire Central?
The Situation Room.
The Situation Room. That sounds pretty exciting. So with that, then I would adjourn this until 1:15. And anybody who wants to follow the boys over there to the Situation Room is invited to do so.